Welcome to Stories Within Us. I am your host, Lisa Bush, and this is a very personal and a very emotional podcast for me. Today's podcast is with Dr. Angela Grace, who is an advocate and an expert in comprehensive school health. As I said to my husband this morning, I shouldn't have to have this podcast episode. I shouldn't have to have this podcast episode because Dr. Angela Grace and I shouldn't be talking about a curriculum that never should have been implemented in the first place. It received detailed, specific, consistent feedback from school boards, from professors, from educators, from concerned parents that this curriculum was not appropriate on many levels. And yet here we are teaching our K1, 2, and 3 students the new curriculum in language arts, math, and in health. To paint the picture as to like exactly where I am right now, this morning, I just bundled up my kids and sent them off to school. It's currently negative 17 degrees Celsius or 1 degree Fahrenheit for those listening in the States. So kids are indoors. And like so many parents, I feel in the province, we're just trying to keep our kids safe. Like our bar for our kids, I feel like has lowered to like, can we just keep them mentally, physically safe? And at the end, Dr. Angela Grace is very optimistic and, you know, kind of has a call for action that we as parents and advocates and educators can make a change. But I mean, right now, I feel scared. And I told that. Again, I had a conversation this morning with my husband and I said, I'm scared. There was an article released over the weekend that Ontario's experiencing nearly triple the average of children in hospital ER rooms for respiratory illnesses this time of the year. And late last week, there was numerous articles going out about how schools in Edmonton were facing absentee rates that were similar to January of last year at the height of the pandemic. There were over 14,000 kids absent in school. And the Alberta Premier Daniel Smith said, our province will not permit any further masking mandates of children's in Alberta's K-12 education system. Like, I'm so incredibly frustrated and deflated. We have people in power that just seem determined that they will not do what scientists and educators and everyone is saying the right thing, whether it pertains to the curriculum in the schools or whether it pertains to keeping our kids out of emergency rooms and in school so they can learn. So I'm just being honest. I love the work of Dr. Angela Grace. She's someone I admire. She's someone I could listen to speak forever. She has such a calm and passionate voice. But as I'm recording this intro and like I'm not in the best place when it comes to this province and what's happening with our kids, to be honest. And as a mom, you don't know what to do to keep them safe. So before I get even more emotional, let me tell you a little bit about Dr. Angela Grace. Dr. Angela Grace is a passionate badass, belly dancing, boxing, mediating counselor, shamanic practitioner, writer, professional troublemaker, musician, and artist. Angela holds a PhD in counseling psychology with a specialization in the prevention and treatment of eating and body image issues, life stressors, and trauma. She specializes in holistic approaches to women's health and well-being. She was an invited community stakeholder reviewer in the 2017 and 2018 draft curriculum and has been a ceaseless advocate for large structural changes to the wellness curriculum that was implemented this year in grades K-3. She has fine arts and education degrees and previously worked as an elementary teacher and school counselor, which gives her an in-depth understanding of girls, families, teachers, and school communities. Angela's training in theater, art, dance, yoga, and play therapy enables her to work in creative ways to enhance girls' and women's sense of well-being. In today's episode, Dr. Angela Grace and I discuss how body image is a social justice issue. We discuss our involvement with the 2018 curriculum and how it compares to the curriculum that is currently implemented in grades K-3 in Alberta. And at the end, we dive into consent because it's such an important issue for our kids. And it's one that Dr. Angela Grace has spoken out about with the curriculum that our kids are currently learning. I hope you enjoy today's conversation with Dr. Angela Grace. Angela, thank you for being a part of Stories Within Us today. And wow, do I have a lot of questions for you.
Thank you, Lisa, for having me. I may or may not have a lot of answers.
Oh, I think you do. I think you do. Before we jump in, can I just say it has been years since I've met someone who has both a fine arts and education degree. I'm one of you.
That's awesome.
I knew we had a lot of overlaps when I was researching you. I feel like our Venn diagram of Angela's interests and mine have a lot of that shared in-between part. But before we begin, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your background? I love the story that you tell about what initially got you into researching body image. So could you share that with us as well today?
Absolutely, for sure. Well, I was raised on a ranch in rural Alberta. So I'm a rural Alberta farm girl. Was in 4-H, had my kittens and my horses, and loved living on the farm. My family still lives there and has a ranch there. So grew up in small town rural Alberta. Yeah, went to school there, went to high school, took piano lessons, and decided, well, I'm going to be a teacher. So I got my fine arts degree first in theater. It's actually really fascinating. I was accepted to both music and theater. And at the time, I chose theater because I wanted to be social and be with more people than locked in a practice room. And yet, then when I went on to school, I was locked behind my computer keyboard, not even making beautiful music. So now I'm reactivating my interest in music. So just kind of fun how things come full circle.
I was thinking that a theater degree would absolutely come in handy with teaching.
Oh, absolutely. Well, then my first job, so I trained as a high school English and drama teacher. So I have both English and fine arts. And my first teaching job was actually grade one. So it's just funny how you train in one area and then you get what you get and end up loving it. So I love teaching elementary. Yeah, elementary drama and music. And we had tons of fun. And so, yeah, back to your question about what got me started doing research on body image issues was a group of my little grade one girls. There was something off and I couldn't figure out what it was. And then I caught one of them throwing out her lunch. And I said to her, honey, what are you doing? And she said, oh, we started a diet club to be like our moms. And they were throwing out their lunches behind my back and running laps around the playground at recess to try to lose weight. And there was nothing in my teacher training that prepared me for this. And I had an eating disorder when I was in junior high, high school, college, university. So I knew the pain of excessive dieting, excessive exercise, of hating your body, of never feeling good enough in your own skin. And when I saw this happening to these little six-year-old girls, I knew I had to do something. So I went back to university and got my master's in counseling at the University of Lethbridge. I was a private practice counselor, psychologist, and medicine hat for several years, but I wasn't satisfied in my work because it wasn't fully in the area that I truly wanted to work in, which was girls and women and eating disorder prevention and schools and assessments and getting really back in, creating some change for kids. And so I went back to, I applied for my PhD and I got accepted to the University of Calgary. And my focus was comprehensive school health and eating disorder prevention in youth. And it was fascinating how it led me down the rabbit hole of the overlap between youth, education, wellness, mental health, nutrition, and then into a whole realm of social justice. And if someone had told me 30 years ago, Angela, you're going to be a feminist, social justice psychologist, heavily invested in education and political change in Alberta, I would have laughed. But it's fascinating when you grow and change and kind of follow the path and desire change, then it kind of leads you down interesting paths. Actually, I just got invited by the Psychologist Association of Alberta to do some provincial and national workshops on reducing weight stigma in healthcare. And so to me, it's just really, really exciting how my own trauma and experiences with having an eating disorder led to so many different things in the realm of prevention and treatment. So it's really cool.
You made the connection between eating disorders, healthy body image, social justice. Can you make that connection for us?
Sure. Well, if we look back, so often people think that eating disorders are a desire for control over the body. But we have to look at it much deeper than that, is what is the societal oppression that leads people to think they need to change their bodies? What is the oppression for these little girls? What is the pain for these little girls that they wanted to start dieting and getting skinny at age 6? And it really speaks to a societal obsession with weight bias, with fear of obesity, with judging others for their appearance. And interestingly, I started this work over 20 years ago, and I can honestly say it is worse now than it was then.
The incidents,
oh my goodness. I work with 5-year-olds with eating disorders, and women of all ages, like I have women in their 70s saying, I'm so tired of this. I've hated my body my entire life. So it really is a social justice issue of how do we perceive women's bodies and men's bodies. You know, we have this thin muscular ideal and this horrific judgment about appearance, thinking that we can judge people's health by their appearance. We have this tremendous weight bias in our society, even to the point of people are denied jobs because of their body size. They're denied healthcare because of their body size. There's a tremendous amount of shame. Sometimes going into a doctor's office, I have women asking me, can you please help me find a new doctor? I want to go in and get antibiotics for an ear infection and not be offered gastric bypass surgery because of my size. And so it is this pervasive, pervasive problem that we have with weight bias and stigma and oppression of all sorts. And it's fascinating. I'm going to bring an interesting story into this. About 8 years ago, I got a rescue dog. And this rescue pitty did not eat for 5 days when I got her. She was so anxious. She had anorexia. So if we look at the word anorexia nervosa, anorexia is the inability to eat. Nervosa is due to nervousness. And so it really is an anxiety problem. I'm not saying that all eating disorders are anxiety, but it certainly causes, if there's stress in the body, it can cause the digestive system to shut down and people to start stressed about how to make their lives better. And we're taught to do that with diet and exercise. There's so many things where we're hard on ourselves and hard on each other, and it translates down into social justice. How do we treat each other? And how can we change it towards health promotion for all instead of actually causing harm?
So Angela, you have been, and I'm just going to put a plug in, recently on the Teacher Fan Club. That's with Dana Fulweiler and Elizabeth Tingle. And it is a phenomenal podcast. And I listened to that episode twice. I listened to it once when it first came out, and then a few weeks ago in preparation of this interview. So for those listening, Angela really dives into eating disordered in kids, disordered eating in kids, what the difference between the two is, and what we as adults in school communities can do with kids that we might be concerned about, or we might see some warning signs. So I will say, if this is something that interests you, please listen to that. We're going to take a bit more of a look into how this relates specifically with the curriculum that is currently implemented. It was implemented this year, but it was such an amazing podcast. I'll put a link in the show notes. I encourage everyone to please check it out.
I'm just going to add into that. You said, if this interests you, I really believe that everybody needs to be aware of weight bias and eating disorders in kids and how we can unintentionally cause harm. One of the things that happens is, in this desire for our kids to have healthy lunches, is there ends up being food policing in schools, and it ends up leaving children feeling really bad about what their parents are choosing to send, and they end up self-judging. And so I firmly believe that every teacher, regardless of age or subject that you teach, you really need to be aware of the social justice issues around body image in your students. Change only happens when those in power are on board and we need to not just leave this like with a health teacher or with early elementary. It's everybody.
I agree. That's a great point, Angela. And there are so many things that you discussed in there that I think so many of us, myself included, were like, it completely flies under our radar. We have no idea what we're doing it. And we're really perpetuating this really toxic cycle.
And you know what, Lisa, I was that teacher. Like I was a grade one teacher who didn't know. And like I said, there was nothing in my training. So that's what I did. I did a deep dive. Honestly, my PhD research went back to the 1600s. Like that's how deep I dove back to the deepest eating disorder research that I could possibly find. And it was back in the 1600s.
So you were like in the edge of the Renaissance and Middle Ages.
Yes, exactly. It totally was.
Oh, yes. That's awesome. Let's talk for a minute about your involvement in the past with curriculum and your involvement specifically with the health curriculum. In February of 2017, you were invited to review the draft curriculum and you spent hours collaborating, rewriting objectives, finding best practices. And then in 2018, you were invited to review the changes to the draft and you were satisfied with how it was ready to be piloted. And you took us through your involvement in April of 2019. Kenny was elected. And Angela, when he was elected in April of 2019, I was actually a curriculum consultant for that curriculum that you had worked on.
Phenomenal. And
I was out of a job.
Yeah.
I mean, ultimately, it wasn't immediate, but I think all the curriculum consultants got very nervous because we knew kind of the ideology shift coming in. We didn't know if we would have jobs. It was a curriculum that I too absolutely loved.
It was. You know, the exciting thing about being a community stakeholder reviewer on it was I got to speak from my perspective. And then in 2018, what was amazing was, so in 2017, the wellness curriculum wasn't great. It was still based on outdated ideas about obesity prevention in schools and the idea that kids needed to have fitness plans and count their calories and sugar content. And I stood up in front of a room of 150 experts and was like, this curriculum has an eating disorder. Like this curriculum is going to cause harm. And these are all the best practices to transform it. And that's what they did. And then in 2018, when I went back to review it, I got to stand up again and say, okay, this is significantly improved. And now what we need to do is make sure that all of these concepts are cross-curricular across all subject areas, the broad spectrum of every grade and every subject, and then stacked per grade as well. And so at that time, I got invited back to review the science curriculum from Comprehensive School Health and Music. And so I left that meeting in 2018 so excited about what was going to happen over the next year. And then, of course, it was declared that they were going to pilot it in 2019. So I thought my job was done. And then, when Jason Kenney threatened to shred the curriculum, it was kind of like off over on my radar, kind of like mosquito buzzing. Like I just didn't really think of it too much. I'm like, oh, well, that's kind of weird noise. And then that fall, when I heard that the curriculum consultants had been let go and Kenney was doing this new review, I got really worried. So that's when I met with my MLA, Jason Copping, to say, hey, I'm still here. I want to work on this curriculum, and promised me he'd send my name to Adriana LaGrange and my resume. And it just got, I thought it was going to happen. I thought I was going to get to keep working on it, just like you. The weird thing was he said that a lot of the curriculum development committee, he said a lot of them, the consultants were retired. And I'm like, Jason, I'm right here. I just couldn't imagine all those people retiring.
No, they did not retire.
They didn't retire. Like it really was, you guys got the rug pulled out from under you.
The thing about it, because we will talk about it and just be forewarned, I get really, really geeky with curriculum. I love it. I studied it. It fascinates me. But there were eight of us working for a school district here in Calgary, because for those listening not in education, like a new curriculum takes it really takes years of training and resources and collaboration. And so the school district I was with was really mindful of that. And they were really trying to make this as smooth for the educators, for the students as possible. So there were eight of us. Seven of us out of the eight were mothers with kids mostly starting off in the public school system in Calgary. And one thing we kept saying throughout our trainings and our interaction with educators and pulling together resources, we kept saying, we can't wait for our kids, like our own kids, to learn this. Like, we were so excited about our own children. Like, I'm getting goosebumps just talking about it, having the opportunity to learn this way because it was so interconnected. And then we're going to talk about this in a minute, but the pendulum has swung back 150 years. I mean, basically, like, we are back to sitting in rows of desks, memorizing useless, random, non-connected facts that I went back in my master's dissertation to early Latin and Roman languages and how they acquired language. And from the beginning, like, this was back before Jesus, from the beginning, they said, they have to connect it to meaningful content. It has to be passionate and it has to be personal. I mean, this was like the Roman and Greek. So we're going back, but I really digressed. I want to ask you, because you are all over the place. You've been speaking at rallies. You've been on podcasts. You have your TikTok. No, you have YouTube. Are you on YouTube or TikTok?
YouTube both? And TikTok.
You're both. I'm telling you. Okay. You are all over. I want to know what your driving force is for doing this. So why the health curriculum, and why are you spending hours and weeks and months of your time putting out this information about why the curriculum we have now has to change?
Oh my goodness. Well, I mean, it literally goes back to that group of little girls and my lack of knowledge at that time of how to help them. I had no training in teaching health. It was just assumed that teachers can teach health. So having spent like over 20 years in the field of comprehensive school health, looking at all the layers, like, school health is far beyond just kids eating and getting 20 minutes of daily physical activity. It is the entire environment. Like, honestly, we have this amazing capacity right now to make health and wraparound health services for kids a foundation of our school environment. Like, if we have healthy teachers, healthy school environment, good health promotion for kids, teaching them about their individual choices and individual behaviors, not based on a superficial calorie counting fitness programming model, but rather, how does your body feel? How do we do relationships? Like, how do we go through all the layers of health, starting with the physical body, the mental body, the emotional body, the relational body, the spiritual body, our environment, our communities, and our planet? Like, there are so many multi-layers of health and well-being that can be spread across every grade and every subject. And the 2018 draft curriculum was that. It was so integrated. And having First Nation, Métis, Inuit perspectives and lessons, like actual true teachings, was so beautiful to see. It was such a highly integrated curriculum that was going to do our students and teachers so much good. And so part of the reason that I got passionate about this new draft is when it came out March 30th, 2021, I'll just never forget that week. We'd had the mandates and the isolation from COVID for a year, for over a year. And we were waiting for this new curriculum to come out. My work went into overdrive that first year, so I never got time off. That Easter week, I was like, okay, I'm going to take a week off. I'm exhausted. I'm taking this week off. So we're driving to my parents' house for Easter, and I checked on my phone that this curriculum was out. So I started looking at it, and I spent the whole 3-hour drive just appalled and in tears by how they had taken such a beautiful curriculum, and literally it was gone. All of our work was gone. And I didn't even work on it that much, really. I reviewed it. I wasn't the one, like, and I gave the recommendations, but I wasn't you know, the one putting the objectives in order and everything. I just gave my 2 cents and reviewed it. And I could just foresee all the harm, especially from an eating disorder perspective. They wanted children in kindergarten to be weighing themselves as a measure of growth. They wanted children in grade 2 to design their own fitness programs. Like, once you start treating the body as an object rather than an experience, then significant problems start to happen. Because I was a grade 1 teacher, of course, I reviewed the entire grade 1 curriculum. And I was like, kids are going to hate this. It is boring. There's no structure to it. And I know as a teacher in reviewing, like especially as a beginning teacher, you need some scaffolding and structure to what you do. And then you can start to be creative. But so the traditional curriculum has 3 main parts. So there's the factual knowledge. Of course, we need to know facts. We need to know what to teach. But then there's the conceptual knowledge. Why do we need to teach children this? Why is this relevant to their lives? So that goes back, Lisa, to what you said about historical Greek and Roman, is it needs to be connected. And that's what conceptual knowledge is it helps children and teachers connect the information to children's lived experience. And then the third main part is procedural knowledge, is how do teachers teach it? What is the evidence-based best practice? So what I saw in the 2021 and now the 2022 draft is I saw that 2/3 of good curriculum were thrown out. Conceptual and procedural knowledge were completely gone. And all there was this bunch of facts.
So when you were in the car driving, looking at the health curriculum, I was not sleeping, looking at the social studies draft. And the thing that kind of struck me, I mean, I was reading it and it was kind of like, this is a joke. Like, I really thought like, no, like this couldn't be it.
But
like, just kidding. But no, it was not. The thing was, it was not only facts, it was completely disassociated, inappropriate from a developmental perspective, facts.
Completely cut off from reality in schools, facts.
And I'm going to say in this, because this is what really got me, completely cut off from kids' lives, facts. Because I'm going to go back for just a second to the conceptual knowledge, connected. I used to say to my students, so I taught middle school, and I would say, and this was with a curriculum that was outdated. It was a strong curriculum. It was respected around the world. It did need updating. But I used to say when teaching language arts and social studies, I said, for everything I teach you, I invite you to ask me, Ms. Bush, why do I need to know this in my life? And I said, for everything I teach you, I will have an answer, because I'm not going to waste your time and I'm not going to waste my time teaching you things that the moment you walk out the door, you will forget, because they have no bearing on your life. And so when I was reading the social studies curriculum, I was like, how in the world does this relate to a 6-year-old kid's life on the playground or at home or with his family or with their friends? It was so out of touch. I'll say out of touch with reality, out of touch with the students' reality and the teachers. But I told you I got I geek out over curriculum. I get a little fired up. But anyway.
No, it's true. And of course, I looked at the social studies curriculum, but because it's not my area of expertise, I was like, okay, I need to do my due diligence with the health and wellness one. But for example, some of the ones in there, like literally the First Nation Métis Inuit, were literally tick boxes of just like stuck on there. For example, in grade 2 phys ed, it says they're going to learn hunting, fishing, and trapping. And I'm like, in what school are there going to be guns and traps and fishing lines for children to learn hunting, fishing, and trapping? There was zero relevance and zero thoughtfulness put into it. And then I started to see, I did my review and submitted it and told a few other people about it. And that's when I think it was Lucy Edwardson, a reporter, did the first article about it, saying, wow, this health curriculum is a real problem. And do you know what really bothers me deeply right now, Lisa, is I put out so much about the damage this health curriculum is going to cause. And it is still that, and English, ELA and math are the ones that the government is having been done in schools. And it breaks my heart. Like, it really does. So that's part of the impetus, is love for kids, love and passion and geekiness over comprehensive school health and school health and wellness. And then a heartbreak, because I'm a prevention expert and I can see the damage that's going to come down the pipe. It's deeply worrisome how this government is not placing youth health and wellness as a foundation. Like, we're seeing that not only with this horrible curriculum, we're seeing it with the way teachers are being treated. We're seeing it with the way schools are not receiving the supports and, like, even the air quality that they need during these challenging times. And I just see the mess that is happening in public education. And not only that, like, back to the curriculum, when Adriana LaGrange put out these Have Your Say surveys, then it literally became this Frankenstein cut and paste of the general public's ideas. I know that they took some of my work and some of my advocacy into account, because I saw changes in the curriculum. Like, for example, they took out the word weight and put in the word body image. Well, yes, it's important to teach about healthy body image, but with no conceptual knowledge or procedural knowledge, what are teachers supposed to do? Yeah, it's just so lackadaisical and thoughtless. For example, one of the things was in grade 4, they said they wanted children to notice the observable signs of puberty. We've got a 9-year-old girl who's starting to develop breasts, and that is a visible sign. You bet kids are going to be talking about it, or weight changes or height changes. Like, we have to do this so sensitively and with best practice awareness, and this curriculum is so far away from that. And so the point of that was, instead of saying, okay, how do we repair this? How do we do it sensitively? They just simply took that objective and moved it to grade 2. So there's no thoughtfulness, there's no awareness, there's no scope and sequence. It literally is this cut and paste disaster of random facts. And then the expectation is teachers are supposed to fix it. Good teaching comes from caring about kids and having a good curriculum.
Yeah, absolutely. And teachers, elementary teachers, are generalists. They teach 7 different subjects, depending, maybe 8 if you're at a bilingual school, every day or throughout the course of a week. Mm-hmm. So that is not to put on the teachers, you know, go educate yourself about how to teach. Like, that should be folded in too.
Yes.
The curriculum.
Yeah. It needs to be folded in. Like, literally, I love the idea because I also love to bake. So the idea of folding something in.
Yeah.
Like, literally, this Adriana LaGrange has put this curriculum forward that is, you've got your flour. This is flour. These are eggs. This is sugar. This is butter. With no instructions how to put it together and no relevance. And that's what we need, is to fold it all together so it makes sense. And that we can have this celebratory cake of an awesome public education system with a great curriculum. I listen a lot to Dr. Carla Peck and Dr. Sarah Eaton about education being the great equalizer. If we look at the social studies, like, let's consider social studies and wellness together. Social studies is about studying the social environment and society and relationships between people. Imagine if we combine that with health, and it's about how do we have healthy relationships with each other? Where do these wars, you know, we can have Jason Kenney's 120,000 war dead. Fine. Like, that's a 20-minute lesson in grade 10. Who cares? But where did these wars come from? And what is the relationship? And where's the colonialism that led to them? And where's the interconnection between people and the use of land resources that contribute to our health and well-being? We have so much capacity to have this strong, integrated health, wellness, social curriculum that just makes sense and really serves our kids.
And I will say that the curriculum that we were working on before the UCP was elected in, one of the coolest aspects about it was based on these big concepts that you're talking about, Angela. So you had those facts, but they were all connected. And one thing that we were doing our work was we were seeing, and it was so beautifully planned. And I know that for months, if not years, teachers, specialists, consultants from Calgary were driving up to Edmonton, spending weeks and weekends putting this together. I mean, this was 7 years, I think, in the making, from start to finish.
Huge.
And they did. We got so excited as consultants. We're like, oh, look at that. But you could literally lay a social studies unit, a math unit, a language arts unit, a health unit, and you could connect it all to our relationship with the land, or our relationship with communities and each other, or our past and our future, right? Yes. And within that, there were very solid facts that they would be taking, but then they would get to make those connections and higher level thinking. And I'm going to go back to a quote, because a lot of people, myself included, have talked about the curriculum, but I thought that Dr. Susanna Wong has said it with such clarity. And I have thought about this ever since I heard about it. So she talked on the crash course of the draft curriculum, and I'll include a link for that. Professors around Alberta came together to weigh in on their thoughts about the curriculum. And I feel like I should say, all this work that you guys are doing, this is unpaid, voluntary, for the most part, by and large, out of your free time, studying the curriculum, putting out your thoughts and ideas. This is outside of professor's teaching load or professor's research load. I mean, this is just what people are doing because they are so upset about this. But Dr. Susanna Wong stated, again, something brilliantly. And she says, Alberta has a good track record. So it's been sought out by Finland, I think the Yukon, other areas around the world with its success in its curriculum. Literacy especially is an area of strength. I know math worldwide, we're fairly strong. We have been. And even, she said, the UCP appointed curriculum advisory committee identified literacy as an area of strength. So that was based on PISA and PIRLS and Pan-Canadian test scores. Those are various international test scores. So even the UCP said, hey, literacy is good. Everyone has previously agreed that there is room for improvement. And this is the part. And I thought, yes, Susanna Wong summarizes perfectly. But the current draft has taken out parts that were working and has not taken the improvements that were needed. As someone who was teaching social studies, who was teaching language arts, I did teach physical education, is that we have these really great, solid foundational facts and knowledge. That, for the most part, was solid. What was lacking was we really needed to move this into the 21st century.
Yes.
Into the higher level thinking, into those connections, right?
The connections.
Exactly. And I can tell you, as a language arts teacher, I rarely got a kid in grade 7, in grade 8 that I said, man, I just wish their punctuation was a little better, or I just wish their grammar was a little better. That to me is so unimportant. In grade 7 and 8, they really struggled with making these big conceptual links that they have to make when formulating a cohesive argument. Or does that make sense? So anyway, I just feel like that's kind of something we're saying. We had a solid curriculum, but what they needed more of, they took out. And then they added in more facts that are even worse than the facts we had.
That just doesn't make sense.
No.
It doesn't make sense.
Can I talk for a minute about consent?
Yes.
Because this is not something, I know there have been a lot of talks about the physical education aspect. Mm-hmm. I'll give you an example. I think in the physical education and health that our kids were learning as of last year, they had separate times, right? Physical education was allocated. I think in our school district, kids had it 3 days in a 6 day cycle. Mm-hmm. And then health was a separate entity. And then in this new curriculum that our kids are currently doing right now, there are 9 different aspects. Mm-hmm. And there's no differentiation between this is a physical movement time and this is a sit in your desk time.
Yep.
And even financial literacy was added in there. And I can say, as a parent, I do not want my 5, 6, 7-year-old learning about financial literacy.
But Lisa, you're not going to get your 5-year-old a credit card because it's a form of money. according to this government?
Oh, like when you think about, especially post-COVID, like, oh my gosh, please let's focus on emotional regulation and movement. And anyway, okay. But consent has not been discussed a lot. And you had a great YouTube video, and I'll include the link as mm-hmm. well, where you talk about, you compared the 2018 draft curriculum with mm-hmm. consent and then the curriculum that was implemented this year with consent. Could you walk us through that? Because I found that horrifying, to be honest, very alarming. I found that very alarming.
Well, it is very alarming. So I remember in 2000, I can't remember if it was 2017 or 18. No, it was 2017. I sat with a representative from the Sheldon Kennedy Center, and we sat there for a good hour talking about how consent should be delivered in the curriculum. And we talked about issues of, okay, well, it can't just be a matter of saying yes, saying no, because we have to get kids thinking about, well, how do you deal with rejection? How do you deal with if there's a no? We talked about, we have to talk about the emotional regulation. We have to talk about like kids getting an icky feeling inside. How do you know if it's a yes or a no for you? And then we talked about power dynamics. How is a child supposed to give consent or not to an adult? Because children are little people pleasers for the most part. And of course, I'm just thinking of the little boys I used to teach with oppositional defiant disorder. They were not people pleasers, and they definitely knew their boundaries and consent. But we have to place consent in a relational capacity, not just, well, I want this thing or I don't want this thing. We also have to place consent in the capacity of wellness and bodily autonomy. And so, for example, one of the areas, and I talk about this with beginning teachers, is how bathroom policies can be an important part of teaching consent. If a child says, I need to go to the bathroom, and a teacher says, no, what you're doing is you're taking away the child's bodily autonomy. You've got a little person who feels the sensation they have to go to the bathroom. And then a person in power tells them they're not supposed to. It causes confusion for the child. And so we need to think about, how can we have children have this bodily autonomy with their yeses and their nos nested in peer relationships and hierarchically in adult relationships as well? And then what are the resources that we're going to use? And so part of the danger of this curriculum in like the 2022 draft that's being used is consent is very victim blaming, and there's no conceptual or procedural knowledge of helping teachers to teach it in a way that nests it in relationality and bodily autonomy. So consent is far more complex than saying yes and no. It's how do we respect those yeses and nos, and how do people in power respect those? It's so much more complex. And so, yeah, I did a little video going through the K-6 version of consent. The wording just changes a little bit each grade, but it doesn't explore more complexity when it needs to be explored.
Yeah. And the thing that I found alarming and angering when I watched the video that you put together, Angela, was that it did. It like literally from kindergarten, I think you went through grade 6, was mm-hmm. it was the same knowledge-based outcome, is that say no when you mean no yeah. and say yes when you mean yes. And I was...
But the question is, how are kids supposed to know that? Like sometimes I don't even know.
Exactly. And it goes back to what you said. It's relational. And you talked a little bit about, oh my gosh, I did such a deep dive into your work. I can't even remember where you talked about it, but it goes back to, they have to be in touch with their own relationship with their own body. They have to be in touch with their own relationship with others. You went into the spirituality, right? All of the different elements that are all interconnected that go into consent. And so I don't have a training in how to teach this. I would feel very, I would say, wary. Mm-hmm. Okay. I would feel very wary having to look into the eyes of 6-year-olds and talk about it in a way that I was knowing that was empowering and impactful and not detrimental. Mm-hmm. And so what you were saying, the victim blaming, yeah, if you say no, if you mean no, yes, if you mean yes, and then they get an adult situation.
Well,
it staggers the mind and their power, like you said, powers of authority. And I am going to throw out one quick statistic. And I knew this statistic. I first heard it years ago mm-hmm. and I was shocked, but I did brief research and there haven't been a lot of Canada-wide studies. I think the last one was in 2010, but you can interject, Angela, but it was 1/3 of all girls reported sexual assault before the age of 18. And I think it was 1 in 6 boys. Mm-hmm. I mean, so to think you have a play date and you have 3 little girls running around in your house, to think one of you statistically, mm-hmm. I want a better curriculum than that. Like I want empowered kids.
Well, yeah. And another part of that is if a child's boundaries are broken, consent did not occur, and a child's boundaries are broken in any capacity, how do we empower the children to tell? And I'll share personally, I was one of those girls. I was assaulted at age 12. I was the brave little girl that told, and no adult listened to me. So that also drives a significant amount of the social justice aspect of my work and my passion for empowering children and women, because I know the pain of that and the dismissal that can happen by teachers and by parents when a child experiences that. And where does that leave a child? Like, that's why our schools are such an important part for health promotion and prevention and wraparound health services and mental health. Like, we have this capacity and we are in a time of change right now. Hey, if the UCP like want things so strictly conservative, if they want to transform environments for privatization and for wealth effects, then we can also stand together and turn the tides and say our children need to focus on health and well-being and connection and relationship, especially after the last couple of years that we've been through.
So Angela, as part of Stories Within Us, I ask each guest to submit a picture, a snapshot of them that was a moment in time that sparked connection, healing, disruption, challenge, I should say, and or change, because a lot of the pictures have all of those. But can you talk to us about the picture that you have shared with us today?
Okay. Well, that picture is really, really, really meaningful to me. I'm an enigma. I have this interesting contradiction of traditional religious, like, so I was raised Catholic, so like traditional religious, traditional psychology, and traditional education. Yet here I am in this role of feminist social justice. I'm going to call it sacred rebel. And so I hold the foundations as well as the idea of progress and change. So this picture means a lot to me because it's a picture of me. So getting professional pictures taken, and it's with my rescue pit bull. And so that in itself was meaningful to me because pit bulls are, some people consider them, you know, dangerous dogs. And yet here I have this sweet, sucky baby pit bull who was the sweetest thing and most mild-mannered. She taught me so much about healing trauma. So the other thing I love about this picture is it's the contradiction of a professional woman against this graffitied background. It's actually the one on the highway, old burned out gas station that's now graffitied up on the way to Canmore. And every time I drove by that, I just love it. And so I got my professional pictures there because it's about facing all the contradictions in life. Like, how can we have this beauty and professionalism along with kicking the rubble in a grungy area? And also, like, the background of it's this old burned out gas station, yet people have made it beautiful and into a fun skateboard park. So it's just, yeah, I love the contradictions in that. The picture also means a lot to me because I lost my dog this spring. And so that's one of my favorite pictures that I'll always have of her.
Yeah, I love the connections that you made and the contradictions, but the connections from religion, spirituality, career background into this picture. So that was awesome. Thank you, Angela. And I know exactly where that gas station is. We drive by it, and I have always wanted to stop, and I've always been like, that would be such a good place for pictures. So
it was a great place for pictures. I had so much fun at my little photo shoot there. It was super fun.
Awesome.
There's some more profanity graffiti in the background. So I had some fun with those pictures as well.
I'm sure you did. Angela, thank you so much for joining us today. Thank you so much. I have to say, as a mom here in Alberta, thank you so much for the work that you're doing, the relentless advocacy that you're doing with the curriculum. Yeah, and speaking up for some of the most vulnerable members of our population, our kids. So thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me today.
You know, Lisa, one of the teachings I've learned from Indigenous elders and women's circles, and one of the teachings that really sticks with me, is that what we do now impacts the next seven generations. And so I'm not only doing this for the children now, but for their children and grandchildren. Because what we do now for each other, for education, for our land, for climate awareness and our planet, it is just so important to create the future that is sustainable for our kids and our province. And I know not a lot of people go that big, but I think about the intergenerational trauma that has happened through poor education and the acts that we need to do in honor of truth and reconciliation. And so I take that role and I take this work very seriously, because our children are going to shape our province. And I want there to be a province for them to shape and them to have the capacity to have the future that they want. That's what this is about.
As always, I thank you for being a part of Stories Within Us. I invite you to share this work, text an episode to a friend, rate it, leave a review, share it with others on your social media site. Help amplify the stories shared. Remember to tag Stories Within Us when you post. It's at Stories Within Us on Twitter and at Stories Within Us Podcast on Instagram. The design for Stories Within Us was created by Dr. Milena Rejikowska and Chris Shattuck of Two Hot Soups Consulting. Post-production and sound editing is done by East Coast Studios. Thank you once again for listening, and here's to creating change within us and change around us, one story at a time.